As I'm sure you can tell from the title, today we're going to be talking about eating disorders and body dysmorphia, and I just want to give a disclaimer that Clara and I are just sharing our personal experiences with this. We are not giving any type of advice, we're not doctors, we're not professionals, and we're just sharing our personal experiences. But if you or someone you know is struggling with one of these things, first of all, I'm really sorry to hear that, because, you know, as you'll hear in this episode, we know what a beast that is and how all-encompassing it can be. And please reach out to a doctor or start doing some research. I've included some resources linked in the show notes, including the EMILY program, the National Eating Disorders Association, and Eating Disorder Hope. And yeah, just wanted to throw that in there because it is really important that we're sharing our stories, but I also don't want anyone to take what we've said or taken out of context. We want what's best for you, and we know that we're not medical professionals. Enjoy the episode.
Yeah. Okay. Wait, can we... I'm like kind of nervous, actually.
Yeah. Are you ready?
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like
the TTI, the time I had an eating disorder.
Okay, welcome back to Lilo the podcast. I am your host, Alexa, and once again, I'm here with my bestie girl, Clara.
Hi, everybody. It's me again.
And this one, I just have to spit it out. So today we're going to be talking about eating disorders and body dysmorphia. And
yay, so fun!
We've wanted to do it for so long, but
it's a hard thing to talk about.
It's hard to bring it up, and it's hard to kind of dive into it because I feel like there's so much that I've blacked out from it too.
You can't just be like, hi, nice to meet you, I'm Clara, I used to have an eating disorder.
Right. We had to make sure that both of us were in a good headspace to do it. And I feel like
we've tried to do this a couple times, but
yeah, there's been times that it was just like, you know what, we can't do that today, and that's fine. So I'm glad we're finally doing it today, kind of ripping off the band-aid. I don't want to say getting it over with, because like, no one's forcing us to do this, you know, but it is, I feel like, one of the main topics that when we wanted to start a podcast together, we wanted to talk about. So,
and I think too, the reason that we want to talk about it is because we were both struggling in the same way, but we never said anything to each other about it until later. So, and I never knew anybody who struggled with an eating disorder. I knew like they existed and like people had them, but I didn't know anybody, and I just thought I was.
And you don't always know that you have one.
Yeah.
It's not, or that, and it's like,
there's varying levels of having an eating disorder, and it doesn't always, it looks very different for everybody. And I was thinking about this morning, if you've come to listen to this podcast because you want like a black and white answer about something, you ain't gonna find it from me, because there's so much nuance and it's so personal and so different for everybody. And it really depends on like literally everything in your life.
Yeah. It can really take over your life. And I feel like it's really hard to seek out that help or be honest about it, because one, it can feel like nobody else around you is dealing with it, or it's something that you can just fix on your own, or maybe you don't want to fix it. Or a lot of times too, like when you struggle with something as a teenager, a lot of things can be brushed off as like, oh, she's just a teenager, like the teenage years are hard, or oh, your body's changing, or you know, your hormones are up and down. And so there's just so much that's kind of, or like, oh, you're just really stressed from school. Like, I just feel like the entirety of time that I was in school, or like kind of teenager to young adult, there's so many times that things have been brushed off just because it was like, oh, well, you know, any one of those reasons I just listed. And so it can be really difficult in that way too. And I think that this will be really, really good because we struggled in different ways. and had different routes of recovery and still have probably different relationships now with like ourselves and our bodies. And I think we've grown a lot, but I also, I don't know, for me personally, I don't know that it's something that I'll ever be like free from as if I never had it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You, like for me, I kind of am in a place where it's just a acceptance, mm-hmm. where it's like, and I don't know that this is untrue for anybody else. Like, mm-hmm. I think that maybe you can have these thoughts of, you know, body dysmorphia without having an eating disorder or having mm-hmm. a history of eating disorders. Like, I don't know if this is thoughts that people have.
Yeah.
On a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. And like, what's that line between body dysmorphia and just being like, yeah, maybe I am, like, maybe my body's changing, or like, maybe I should, mm-hmm. I don't want to say that though. I don't want to say like should lose weight or anything like that. But there are times in life when it's like, yeah, maybe.
It would be the healthiest option.
It would be the healthiest option to like make sure you're like being physically active is always going to be a healthier option. But there could be a point as well when somebody is, it actually is like a better thing for their health to lose weight, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of a hard thing when it comes to balancing being in recovery for an eating disorder and still wanting to be healthy, but like not take it to an extreme. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's something that both of us have had a struggle in. So,
and I think that's something that's the part is walking this fine line of creeping into disordered eating and negative mindsets. And also for me, learning in recovery, it was never about food. It was never about that. It was, for me, it was like layered with other mental health things. Mm-hmm. So toying that line between like, oh, maybe I'm struggling with anxiety today or in this moment for whatever reason, toying that line of this is becoming disordered and affecting me in a day-to-day life and putting me in a really bad like mental headspace versus this is what is making me feel good in my body and healthy. Mm-hmm. I think that's the line that I'm probably going to walk forever.
Mm-hmm. So kind of diving into personal experiences with it beyond just general things, I'm just gonna kind of talk about where it started for me. And yeah, growing up, I was always just like a little shrimp, like just small, petite, like never thought twice about anything. I was really active, like always in a couple different sports. My biggest one was competition dance. So like you do everything. You spend probably like 25 hours a week at the studio, which when you also have school and your kid, that's a lot. That might be an overestimate, but that's probably more into the later teen years.
A lot of time nonetheless.
Yeah, a lot of time. And I just hadn't really had an issue with putting on weight or cared what I ate. I ate like a lot of junk and, you know, like chips before ballet class, you know, but it didn't matter to me. I didn't understand like different foods provide different kinds of energy and all that. Cause I was 12, you know what I mean? Like you're going to kind of have energy either way. So it doesn't really.
So true.
It doesn't feel like it matters as much. And so much of that is posed as like, oh, that's bad for you. That's not healthy. This is healthy. Oh, that's super fatty, blah, blah, blah. But when you're kind of a string bean, you just don't really pay attention to much of that. Like it doesn't really affect you. Now, I would say while I was in dance, I don't feel like I had an eating disorder. I don't feel like I felt any type of way about it. I think I maybe noticed because I was burning so many calories, I could eat a lot. So like if I went out to dinner with friends or we, you know, we all got Chipotle and then someone would be like, oh my gosh, I'm so full after like a quarter of a bowl. And I'm like, I could actually polish off this entire bowl. From there, that was when I started kind of noticing like, oh, maybe I'm eating differently than other people. Mm. And what age? Like maybe I should eat. That was probably like 15. So I was still in dance, but I was about to quit. That's when I kind of started noticing like, oh, maybe should I be eating less? Like, should I be full after? Like, why am I eating too fast? All of that stuff. So I think that's when I kind of started being more conscious of it while I was still in dance. And I do remember doing like, I mean, you stare at yourself in the mirror all day, all the time. Yeah. And you're supposed to, like, you're constantly supposed to check your form and like flat as a board, like engage your core, tuck your tummy or your pelvis under. I hope I'm saying that. I feel like I'm mixing up words in my head. But anyway, So in ballet, you're constantly monitoring yourself in the mirror. And in our group dances that we're going to compete with, you're constantly told, look in the mirror and see, are you making the same shape as that person? And, you know, like with your arms, with your body, whatever, because we need to be uniform. And I don't think that inherently is bad, but I can see how, like, I can see how that can lead to really harmful and toxic mindsets. Because if you're comparing how your arm doesn't curve the same way as that person, or like, oh, they're such a good dancer, or like, this just seems to come so naturally to them, or like, I'm constantly being told that like this or that, or and they never have that problem, or like, I'm not as flexible as them and it seems to come naturally to them, or any of those things, like, that's where you start comparing your abilities and your body to other people. So it wasn't even necessarily about looks, but it was about being a better dancer.
And looking at yourself in the mirror for like hours and hours on end is very unnatural.
Yeah. And I think there were some toxic things that were not intentional. But I remember one time at a dance competition, we like contoured our abs to make them look more
defined.
And God, we were 15 maybe. So at that point, I didn't care about having my midriff showing or anything like that. And I actually did have like a little bit of abs, so not anything crazy, but, and you know, at the time we thought it was like so funny. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a joke thing we did. Like, we're like, oh, maybe we should do that. I don't think we like seriously did that for all of them, but that was something that I look back and I'm like, I don't think we should be teaching little girls that. And I don't necessarily think that, you know, our dance teacher at the time thought she was doing something harmful in that, and none of us saw something harmful in that. And also, we have to consider here that a lot of these dance moms, too, probably also struggled heavily with body problems, body positivity, things like that, because that's been more of a movement in the later part of our lives. But before that, like, think about the early 2000s. Like, the style was heroin chic. Like, it was like, be so skinny that your low-rise jeans fall off your hips, you know? Like, so it's hard because part of me wants to blame the adults around me, but another part of me knows that they're also just a sad little girl that still hates their body at 50 years old. Aww. And that makes me really sad. Because however I felt when I was in the depths of my eating disorder or body dysmorphia, I'm not saying that all women or whatever have felt that deeply, but imagine to be that old and to still feel so insecure about that. Like, even waiting tables, I feel like I'll ask somebody if they want to add, like, oh, do you want to add protein to your salad, and they're like, oh no, that's far too much, or they'll be like, oh, I ate it all. I'm like, yeah, you ate all of the spinach leaves and roasted beets on your salad. Like, oh, sue you.
Oh no.
And I, you know, I don't, when you're old, there's other health complications that could come with maybe ordering a burger over a salad, right? Like, people have heart problems and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I can also tell when there's a vibe about it that is like,
almond mommy.
Like, damn, you're 80 years old and you still say, ugh, I cannot eat a hamburger. Like, God damn, I've had some really freaking good hamburgers in my life. Imagine going your whole life like that. And so, you know, I don't want to blame the adults in my life. I think there's a couple that definitely influenced me more heavily in a way that I don't want to pass down to my children. I don't want to encourage any of those things that anyone says to friends or people younger than me. I think that the best case scenario is just not talking about somebody's body at all. Like, and I'll get to that in a bit later. But anyway, so when I was 16, I quit dance because it was taking a really, really big toll on me mentally and emotionally. I had a really bad situation at the studio that I was at, and I felt like it was really manipulative and really political and really, like, you know, I was told, like, you aren't confident enough. But then I was also constantly beaten down, and I just felt like I was never going to be good enough. And you can work so, so, so hard. And I remember one practice, I was just like heaving, like I could not catch my breath. It was for my solo. And so it was just us. And my dance teacher was like, why are you so out of breath? Like, kind of acting like I'm like weird, dramatic, like, get over it. Okay, let's run it again. And I'm like, sat there, I can't catch my breath. And so after that, I went to the doctor. They're like, yeah, we think you have exercise-induced asthma, so I had an inhaler for a while. But I have to say, besides, like, some of those things in dance, sometimes like the tap, it would get really dusty. And so I would feel like a hard time breathing then. And yeah, maybe I mean, no one's ever told me I don't since then. But I'll tell you, I've never had an asthma attack since any of that, or like it's never been life-threatening. It's just exercise induced, which is inherently not as serious. But a part of me does wonder, like, was I experiencing panic attacks at time? And dance was my everything. Like I cared so much about it. And so it was really heartbreaking to leave, but I was also like, but it's killing me to stay. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's kind of a repeating theme in my life, right? And that was one of the first big decisions I had to make. Well, I'd say the first big decision I had to make was moving schools in ninth grade. The second big one was quitting dance. And it was so hard. I mean, I remember thinking like, I look really good. Like I remember feeling really positive about my body because, you know, dancers get that kind of that hype to them. And so I didn't really know what it meant to like have a good body. Like people like, oh my gosh, you have these long, beautiful legs. Like you have amazing legs. And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't care then. But now as someone who's 25, I'm like, oh, I get it. You know, like I get why that's a good thing. Right. But I wonder how that made the girls with short legs feel. And not to say like you can't lift somebody up, you know, like I deserve compliments even if, you know, but I just think,
it depends on the context.
Unintentionally, I was a lot of things about what was good or bad or feeling like your body is good or bad were reinforced through that. And so like my dance studio never weighed anybody. They never told anyone they had to lose weight. They never told us, oh, you can't eat this, you can't eat that. Like that was never a thing at my studio, which I know does happen at some other studios, which is like actually so heartbreaking to me.
That's crazy.
But that was never a thing at my studio. Like I don't, but that doesn't mean I wasn't weighing myself at home. Yeah. And my ballet teacher did say, she was like, no one can participate in my class if they have an eating disorder. Maybe she said it in like lighter words, but basically she didn't want to condone that. She was a professional ballerina. Mm-hmm. And I think she probably saw that to a lot of people. And so it's not like she would kick anybody out of class, but she wanted to make sure that she was reinforcing that skinnier isn't better, you know? Mm-hmm. But of course, I'm looking in the mirror and thinking like, oh, my tights kind of squeeze me more right here. And so I have this little like pouch where my tummy is. No, babe, that's just normal. Like you're not going to be flat board. You're not going to be a flat board. And that's something that I like still to this day have to retrain my mind.
Well, you heard it so much too, like flat as a board, flat as a board.
Like, right. That I thought like literally. And when you see other people that are super skinny around you.
Why they're flat as a board, why can't I be flat as a board?
And so unfortunately, and this is going to sound so bad, but like I would compare myself to other girls in class, and if I was like, well, I'm not the skinniest, but I'm not on the other end of the spectrum either, so like I'm fine, which is so awful. Like why was I in my head thinking about anybody else's body either? And I will say that that changed after dance, but that's when I just started kind of getting curious or thinking about bodies in any type of way. So after I quit, another thing to note too is that I hadn't gotten my period. So I did probably towards the end, like in my last year of dance. So that's one thing that like after you get your period, that's when you start maybe getting boobs or putting on a little bit more weight or getting some more curves. And so I hadn't really experienced that until after I quit dance either. So after I quit, I won.
It's like boom, 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 just piling on.
After I quit, I, for one, wasn't nearly as active because I was, you know, trying to work out every day. And I thought, oh, I have to, like I was doing yoga sculpt. So I was going every day because somebody else that I danced with that quit was like, oh yeah, I go every day. So that's when I started to feel immense guilt if I didn't go a day or something. So there was that. And then there was also like, oh, you're not burning as many calories. So like your food intake, you don't need as much. But I wasn't used to that. So I could still eat as much. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then another thing is later that year, I started birth control. And that's something that can really affect your weight as well. And I don't know if it played a part, but it could have. And also just being 16. So my junior year of high school is when I would say that the flame of my eating disorder and body dysmorphia really ignited and spread like fucking wildfire. And I was struggling so heavy and it really, really spun me in a depression for my junior and senior year. It really played a part. And it was really hard. And I just remember looking around at school and thinking, like, I don't know, I just felt like a lot of girls at our high school were really small. And that was hard when I think a big part of it too was like, I don't want people to notice and think like, oh my God, she quit dancing, now she gained a ton of weight. Like a lot of it was, I was like, I'm scared people are noticing that like I'm filling out more, like my face is puffier and all of that. And I look back at some pictures from then and it's just sad to me because it was so much more dramatic in my head than what I was looking at. And now I'm like I would do a ton of body checks in the mirror every day, all the time. And I'm like, damn, I would kind of love to like look like that now, which is maybe feeding into some of this toxic. But you know what I mean? Like it felt like I was just blowing up and like at a really unhealthy rate. And that
wasn't true.
It wasn't the case. And maybe people did notice or maybe they don't. But I just wish that I hadn't cared so much.
I can tell you now, though, people literally don't remember.
Yeah, true. I don't really remember anybody like I wouldn't remember that about anybody else, you know?
Right. Do you remember that about anybody else?
Sport or anything like that.
Of course not.
But you're the main character of your own story. So you think everything is so much bigger than it is. And so it was also really hard because at that time I also wasn't as close to my dance friends anymore because they're still in dance. And I also felt a bit of frustration at that point because everybody was willing to complain about the treatment and the studio and all of this stuff, but nobody was willing to quit. Or they'd be like, oh my God, I want to quit. Or, oh my God, our dance teacher's on some bullshit. But it would be like, but everybody's just going to like stay in it and just allow it to continue to happen. And I understand like the love of dance goes deep, but it was killing me. So that was really hard because I think that also kind of put a wedge in there too, because it felt like all my dance friends could talk about was dance. And I got really frustrated because I was like, well, just fucking quit then. Just do it.
Yeah.
And obviously they weren't going to. And we still remained friends throughout high school, I think, but it just wasn't as close, right? Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's fine. Like, I still view everyone I danced with very positively. It just, I think that was like a big transition as well.
But I think your friendship had to like transform in a different way. This isn't a friendship podcast.
Yeah.
But it like kind of is because we're besties. But your friendship had to strengthen in other areas because it totally like fell off in one area, which is why you became friends.
Yeah.
So I think that's actually really cool, though, that the reason you became friends was not the reason you stayed friends.
Yeah, that's so true. But yeah, so I got my first boyfriend. That was a whole different thing because, like, as you know, when you're a teenager and you get in a relationship, you start to get closer with somebody, and when you're dealing with some of these insecurities, like, that's a really difficult thing, and you know, you might be revealing yourself a little bit more. And I was really, really uncomfortable with it, and I had a really hard time tapping into that part of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And just so insecure, I just, like, I didn't want to be like touched on my stomach or anything, or like my waist or anything like that. And I just felt so, it makes me so sad to think about like how it was the only thing I could think about all the time. Mm-hmm. And like every time I ate anything, it was just guilt. Like to live in such intense guilt about something that you need to do to live is really, there's no choice but for it to take over your life.
It's crazy because you literally have to eat 3 times a day. And it's like the thing that in that moment feels like it's going to like destroy you.
Like immense guilt over anything. Or I remember like seeing something. I was watching an episode of the Kardashians, like way old, and they were eating desserts at dinner. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, I wish I could have like a chocolate cake dessert. And there was just, that's when those feelings started coming, or like being out with our friends. And like, it didn't really feel like anybody else in the friend group was struggling with it. So it'd be like, oh my God, yeah, I'm totally going to get a cupcake. And I'd be like, oh no, I'm not feeling it. Desperately, 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 I wanted a cupcake.
1,000%.
But I legit would, if I ate it, I would go home and literally be like, I can literally see it on me. Like, it's
cupcake, cupcake, cupcake. Like that's no, how it feels.
Well, not like see a cupcake on me, but see like, but like I look different.
Yeah.
And that's just no way to live and to live for years. And I didn't know how to get help for it. I didn't know that I needed help. And in all honesty, I didn't want to get help for it. Because
what if I gain weight?
Well, and also I hadn't lost any weight from it either yet. So I was like, oh, it's not that bad. You know, like if I'm anorexic, true. You'll be able to see, or like, you know, if I'm making myself throw up, like at least like I'll.
At least I'm not making myself purge.
Well, the thing was, is I was like, I'm not seeing any results from anything I'm doing. So I kind of wanted to keep doing it until I did, you know. And it's this weird thing, too, where it felt like, and this is such a weird mental health thing that I go through similarly with depression, but I would be like you're failing at having an eating disorder. Like, you can't even fucking starve yourself. Like, you had to eat and then, or like, you can't, like, I didn't fit into one category. And so it was like, oh my God, like, I don't even know how to describe it. But I was literally like, you're so weak. You can't even, like, you're so mentally weak, you can't even commit to, like, being bulimic or being anorexic. Like, I would try to starve myself, trigger, I guess. I would try to shove my fingers down my throat and dry heave and dry heave and dry heave. And I just couldn't, like, none of it became habit enough. Like, I kind of dabbled in them all. Kind of dabbled in a little bit.
Try a bit of this, try a little bit of this.
Or it would be like, I don't eat when we're out with friends or something, and it's like, oh, I want to save money, but then I would go home and then I would snack or whatever, and then I'd feel immensely guilty about it. And it's just hard because also in our hometown there's not much to do for activities other than when we were in high school, other than like, oh, let's go get food, like let's go out to eat. And so that was a hard thing to avoid. And so, you know, it was easier to be like, oh my gosh, like dairy makes my stomach hurt. I'm just gonna be super real about something right now. I have never once been lactose intolerant or had an issue with consuming dairy in my life. But boy, did I convince, and I wasn't even trying to lie, but I convinced myself that it was like, oh, if I eat that ice cream, I'm gonna feel so sick. But it was because of like the guilt.
Yeah, you made yourself feel sick because it was a mental hurdle. Like, I did the same thing.
And it's so hard because, like, when you're mentally ill like that, like, I wasn't trying to lie or be sneaky or hide things from the people around me. But that's what I was doing.
Well, it feels, I was the exact same way. I had a little different cover. I'm laughing about this because I feel like I'm in a place where I can laugh about it and be like, oh my gosh, girl, like, that was so silly. Mm-hmm. And it feels like kind of shameful, but it also like feels like something that you have control over that nobody else knows. And I, like, for lack of a better word, like, kind of got off on that.
Yeah. And I think that's also kind of part of where I learned to enjoy being alone, because I was not hiding something anymore. You know, like, I could go make myself throw up without having to try and worry about like running the sink or covering it up or having some reason or being like, oh my God, like, I really don't feel well. Like, I feel nauseous, rather than it's like, well, you don't feel nauseous. Like, you're just gonna make yourself throw up. You know what I mean? Like, and it's just so hard because other people around us. Now, I would be kind of curious to know if other people at our high school were dealing with this.
I'd be lying if I haven't thought the same thing. Like, not even like
I'm
high school specifically.
I'm not actually saying like, but tell
just,
me, but.
No, I'm just saying like anybody in, because you and I were both like silently suffering by ourselves.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until we confided in each other that we realized we were both struggling. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that anywhere, any other walks in our lives, whether that's like sports, high school, college, work, like, there's gotta be other people out there.
Yeah. And people suffer in silence. They hide it. And so that's part of why I wanted to talk about this, because I'm curious, like, what people that were around us at that time, if they were like, oh my God, I had no idea that like we would be out at a football game and I think that we're having such a good time and all you can think about is how
hungry I am. Yeah.
And just like how I'm not as skinny as the girl in row two.
Right.
Or like, or everybody's, what am I noticing that I have puffed up or something like that. Like,
what am I going to say when we go to Applebee's after this and like, I don't want to eat?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like just like that planning or like looking at the menu.
And you and being always like, tried to like what is deter like, us from going to Applebee's. You were like, we're going to see You're like, we're going to see everybody there. And we're like, yeah, that's the reason we want to go.
You'd be like, why don't what? I would say that. Yeah. I like literally don't even remember that.
Yeah. Or you'd say like, no, I don't want to spend the money or whatever. Or like, I'm not hungry. Like I ate dinner at home or whatever. Like
I didn't eat dinner at home.
And me neither, baby.
Oh my gosh. Wait, that's so crazy. It, like that just reminds me of what you said earlier. Like you blacked out a lot of those memories. Yeah. And like clearly I did too. But wait, that's so sad because that's the point. Like we wanted to hang out with everybody. And when I was there, I would have fun, I think.
Yeah, you were like, just everybody from school is going to go there after the game. Like, it's going to be crowded. Like, blah, blah. And we're like, yeah.
That's the point, that's girl. That's where we want to go. I know. Now I would be like, hell yeah, let's go.
But that, like, that makes me so happy because I've also watched your growth so much. And I actually, honestly, I feel like our, like, there were pivotal moments of growth, like, just a few short years ago. And yeah. We're talking about this starting 10 years ago. And
yo, 10 years ago, that's so crazy.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe more like 8 or 9, but
no, like seriously 10.
Yeah. And it's just hard to grow up like that. And I will say that I also had some other factors that other people in my family struggled with these things or making comments about a body good or bad, or not even about like me or some, but like somebody outside of it, like being like, you know, using the word fat or like chubby or as if it's bad or talking about themselves in such a way. And so
when somebody says like, oh, I feel fat or I look fat, and it's like, you think that, then if you think this about yourself,
like then what
do
I?
You think about me?
Yeah. And like, I'm not comfortable eating around you. So it was like, then
maybe I should be uncomfortable eating around people, because if you're uncomfortable.
Because other people are looking at what I'm eating then, right? And like maybe it's too much or this or that. And so then I really learned to be really secretive about my eating, and I really suffered in silence, and it tore me apart. Mm-hmm. And I struggled so hard. And then I never actually sought specific treatment for it. I didn't really know how. I don't know why I didn't. I just didn't. And I think it's because I thought that I wasn't struggling hard enough. Like I wasn't skin and bones. So I was like, well, I can't go to treat. And I didn't fit into one specific category. Like I was doing this, but also doing that. And I didn't look any different. So, you know, and like, oh, she's just an insecure teenager. She's going through body changes, hormones, all that stuff. You're right. Like, so nothing ever felt severe enough to seek out that treatment. Mm-hmm. Now, I would say, because if somebody says, like I had a psychiatrist recently tell me like, okay, well then how did you get better?
Yeah.
How'd you move past it? Like, how do you know that you're not still struggling with that today? And I would say that honestly, like I went through bouts of it throughout college or after. And when I got to college, I think that was just really refreshing because I saw so many more different body types. And I would see girls that are, you know, bigger, but also like taller. And it just like it wasn't bad. They looked great, and they were so confident and like happy, and they weren't trying to, like they would go to the cafe and eat whatever they want. And like, I was like, oh, you know, like
you,
and this is okay. You just kind of, I don't even want to say like mature a little bit.
You but just get out of your own head sometimes.
Well, yeah. And it was like, oh, I want to be a part of the college experience. Like I want to go party on the weekends. And so there's like the freshman 15, you don't want to gain. But I don't know. I think I just kind of felt better. I was getting a little bit more like reassurance, I guess, in people thinking I look good, you know, like you go to college and all of a sudden like guys are kind of hitting on you and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, maybe like I can be more confident. Like I don't have to make myself smaller or hide away or think I'm like just kind of average. Like maybe I'm Gorgina, you know?
You are Gorgina.
But I didn't really ever feel like that.
I never really felt Gorgina. I never embodied the Gorgina. Embodied me.
Embodied me. But and so I think that's part of it. And then it's also difficult because my depression and anxiety manifest in a way that also can cause me to restrict, because when I'm depressed, I have no appetite. And also antidepressants can do that too. Like, so I've gone on and off different antidepressants to find the right one that works for me. So in every one of those processes, like my appetite would really change, or like then changing birth control methods, like birth control can change your appetite too. And like your, the way that you get your period. So, you know, your hunger can change. And I have never, ever, ever learned about the different phases of your cycle until I was 24 years old. Like, that's crazy. I should have learned about that so much earlier so that I wasn't punishing myself and crying in front of the mirror when it was like, oh, baby, no, 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 honey.
That's just your luteal phase.
You're just in your luteal phase.
Girl, you got organs down there.
Yeah, like you didn't lose 5 pounds since last week.
You didn't gain them either.
You just were in your luteal phase last week and you felt like you looked so much bigger and all of that.
I could never look at
a woman and tell you what phase she's in.
No, I couldn't either.
You see it for yourself.
And you tie some of these like hormonal changes, especially for women, to like whatever you were doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you ate a cupcake during your luteal phase because that's when you like kind of crave it.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, fine, I guess I'll indulge in my crazy obsession with this cupcake, mm-hmm. please. And then you're like, oh my God, the cupcake made me gain 5 pounds.
Yeah. Well, and I was full in. Not possible. I was doing the hot water with lemon and cinnamon in the morning before you eat
anything.
With
apple cider vinegar?
Yeah, I was doing the things. It's just like,
I know the things.
You know all the things.
I know all the things.
And yeah, it's heartbreaking to think about. And also, I won't sit here and say that I completely kicked it. You know, I think that I go through phases. And again, that also, oh, I didn't even finish. Like, my anxiety also really manifests in not feeling, like, feeling too stressed, too anxious to eat. And it really stresses me out to think about what to eat and to plan it. And like, I just get so anxious that I literally can't. Like, I just, when I get anxious, I shut down, I shut up, and I can't like mm-hmm. eat none of that. And so when that is like kind of what your body's used to, especially like you're going into college then. So like you are probably stressed and anxious about school. So then some things are manifesting in that way too. But I was also feeling a lot of freedom because I was at school and I was on my own and I wasn't like surrounded by some home pressures or some things mm-hmm. like that. And it was like nobody here ever knew me as like my stick thin 15-year-old. So nobody's comparing me to that here. Like, so some of that mindset was able to be wiped away a little bit. I think it was harder when I came home because I was scared, like, oh, people haven't seen me in a few months. Do I look really different? And I don't know, because that does happen to people. And when you hear other people talking about someone else that way, it just, that's why I'm so insistent about being like, you can't, like when someone's like, well, I'm not saying, I would never say it to their face. I'm like, but you have to be really careful about who you're saying things around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and what you're saying, because you aren't saying that you think that I gained 20 pounds since I went to college and that, oh, I feel bad for her. But what you are saying is that you're looking at that. And that other people are noticing. And if you think that person looks like that and looks so crazy for being a size 8 now, then what do you think about me? And what are other people thinking about me?
Mm-hmm.
And is everybody talking about me? And it's, oh God, it's
never
just,
talk about other people's body.
No.
Goodbye.
And I like that some of the narrative has changed to being like, you know, encouraging kids by being like, oh, you're so strong and, mm-hmm. and all of that stuff. And I try to, because, you know, like I have some friends that are, or like I have a friend that's like really into going to the gym and everything and loves to like post their gains. And I try to make sure that it, like, because it's like, oh my God, yeah, like I want to encourage them, but you also really want to be careful about like what you're encouraging. So I feel like the route is just like, damn girl, you look strong as hell. Like,
yep.
And I feel like that's another thing that I've been able to transform in my thoughts about my body in a way is more like, especially as you grow older and you start to feel like a little bit more rickety.
The bones like, are just not
I'm 25
moving.
And I still, I seriously wake up like the Tin Man. Like my bones are like, if you go for a run when you haven't in a while and I'm like, no, I feel like I'm like technically everything is in the right place, but some things are just not flowing.
And like your knees
oil.
Are just kind of like,
rickety. That's the best way I can put it. But, and so I think I've been able to change my mindset about that a little bit more and being like, no, genuinely, like I want to be stronger because it feels good. But, or like, I really want to have good endurance because like, I want to do these fun things and it doesn't come as naturally as like when you're 13. Yeah, you could go run a 5K and you probably make a record time and you won't sweat. But when you're 25, I'm like, damn, I might have to train for a 5K. And that was never the case when I was younger because I was super freaking active and you just don't think about it. And so now I feel like I try to, that's the reframe I try to take is being like, I want to be able to live my life to the fullest. Mm-hmm. And I also know that I am the most happy and clear-minded when I feel like I've moved my body and I've showed up for myself. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a really good reroute to take.
That's good.
But I'm not going to sit here and say that I never do body checks anymore, that I don't feel insecure, that I don't worry, like cry about it sometimes. Because
yeah, you'd be lying if you said that.
I can't sit here and lie on my own podcast.
You lose all credibility if you do that.
But that sucks. And that's why I think it's taken so long to record this, because I kept wanting to put it off until I could talk about it fully in the hindsight. And I just had to.
It's never going to be in the hindsight, baby. I'm sorry.
And maybe this is just coming from a place of like never having gotten professional help. And that's something that I've considered too, is even though I'm not like in, like I can eat and not feel any guilt about it, you know? But so I don't feel like I'm in like the full, like it's nowhere near what it used to be. But again, that's something that I'm like, I don't want to pass that down to my children. I don't want to accidentally slip back into that without realizing if I'm going through a period of life that's super high stress. And so I have considered, but just making sure I know, like doing a temp check on myself and being like, okay, when would I maybe and want to seek out help, and where could I go if this is something I fall into again? Just because I know I never did get that professional help. And while I feel like it's not something that like consumes my mind, it's like nothing ever like it used to be, but I still have this like tough relationship with my body where I do want to be skinny, and I don't want to feel that way anymore. But it's really it almost feels like a lifelong battle. Just I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I said, like, don't come to me for answers, because I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that I don't think the same way. Mm-hmm. And I did seek help, and I went to therapy for a long time when I was feeling like I was ready, because I struggled with the same thing. I was like, ooh, I don't want to give this up. Like, this is something that I had total control over, 1000%. And for me, it was never about the food. It was all about how can I have this one little teeny part of my life that only I have control over.
Yeah, I'm really curious, because I feel like part of that plays into having divorced parents.
1000%. And
constantly needing to like switch places, or like your parents being like, oh my God, your dad didn't feed you dinner. Oh my God, your mom didn't pack you snacks, you know? But like that stuff just inevitably happens, because it's like, oh, well, this parent dropped you off at soccer practice, this one picks you up, and they're like, well, I thought your dad was gonna feed you, I thought your mom was gonna feed you.
Why?
And
then you're like,
well,
problem?
I don't want to be a burden. So let's just not feed me then. And not even that, but just like so many parts of your life become out of control. Mm-hmm. And your concept of like what makes life good when your parents get divorced, because before that, like as a kid, your whole life is your family. I mean, you go to school, you have friends and stuff, but like your family is your whole life. And then mm-hmm. once that concept of that and like your sense of home and safety is ripped away, like you're trying to find control in anything that you can. And so I also think that for me, control was a big element. And I'm really curious. I wish I had done when I was in college, I did a study on the correlation between children of divorce and prevalence of anxiety and depression. But I didn't do it for eating disorders.
Is it a circle? Is the Venn diagram a circle?
No, I didn't really have like the biggest
sample size.
I don't think... I forget what this was years ago, so I forget what it was. I don't think that it was necessarily like correlated, but we had a few depressed people.
Correlation doesn't always equal causation.
I don't remember, but control is a really big element in food relationships too. And so I could see that a lot, how that could have been an issue.
Yeah, and I think about the times in my life when I felt like I was struggling the most were the times in my life where I had the least amount of control. Like, graduation from high school. That was really hard for me. My entire junior year.
Of high school?
Of high school. Mm-hmm. With, like, you have the ACT, and I got a job, and, like, you're just, like, juggling all these new things in your life. And this is no fault of my parents. And I just, like, have always been very strong-willed. And I, like, had this clear vision of what I wanted to do for my future. And the landscape of figuring out college stuff was so different when they went to school. And, like, they didn't have as many options as I knew I was going to have. So I was just, like, really taking, like, the bull by the horns with mm-hmm. when it came to, like, prepping for college. And, like, the ACT prep I did, like, I was doing it all. And I felt like I had to do that. And that so much of my life was, like, scheduled and regimented, which I also did. But I felt like the only control I had was over what I was eating. And I genuinely have, like, a interest in health and fitness and wellness and stuff. And I was able to kind of use that and explore that, but in a really unhealthy way. And for me, I was able to use, like, exercise and sports and working out kind of as a cover for my eating disorder, really. And I think, like, now I've learned that there's that fine line between when what you are doing hinders your everyday life, that's when it's becoming a problem. Like, it's okay for you to carve out an hour of your day to work out. It's okay for you to want to be active every day. But now I focus more on, like, my abilities being active rather than, like, the physical results. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fun for me to try, like, a new move at the gym or, like, a different weight. Like, when you finally graduate up from 10s doing bicep curls to, like, 11s. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I think that's fun and thrilling for me, and it makes me feel good and it makes me feel confident. But 16-year-old me was not doing it for that. She was doing it because she wanted to be thin. Mm-hmm. And the me wanting to lose weight in high school wasn't necessarily a bad thing, but the way that I went about it was. So it was a lot of restricting. It was a lot of, like, over-exercising. But, like, that girl was ripped. Like, I could do amazing things. Like, I could go out and run a 5K because I had been running, which all of that is great. And, like, the physicalness for me was not unhealthy, but it was, like, the eating and just the obsession over food that was, mm-hmm. like, really all-consuming.
And it still didn't feel good.
No.
Like,
no.
you were really strong and you were, like, I mean, you were super active.
Yeah.
But you still weren't feeling good because the motivation for it wasn't what it is now.
It wasn't a pure intention. Mm-hmm. And I also, like, wasn't able to get to the next weight mm-hmm. in lifting because I seriously wasn't consuming enough calories to even do that. So it all just kind of came down to a lack of control. So that's kind of where I started my junior year of high school. Oh, look, connection. Mm-hmm. And then it would kind of, like, ebb and flow for a while during senior year. Like, I was really thinking about it a lot. But I was at a place where I was, like, kind of maintaining my weight. I mm-hmm. wasn't really losing any weight anymore. Probably because it wasn't a weight that I, like, could maintain, really. But I was kind of maintaining it for a while. But then, like, I kind of went into the other direction where I was like, fuck it. Like, I don't want to have so much control over anything anymore. Like, I felt like I had this white knuckle grip on everything that I ate. Mm-hmm. And then the cover just, like, blew off. And I was mm-hmm. like, my body was like, you can't do this anymore. Like, you have to eat something. You have to, like, keep eating. And I never got to a weight that was, like, an anorexia diagnosis level. And like you said, like, I kind of bounced back and forth, like, between disordered eating, whether that was like binging and purging through exercise, whether that was like calorie restriction, whether that was just straight binging. Like it went from like, I don't want to have control over things. And then I like kind of came back down my freshman year of college. Like I was struggling a little bit my freshman year. Okay, a little bit is an understatement. I was struggling a lot my first semester, freshman year. And I transferred schools and I just felt like really alone and really lonely. And I felt like everybody was having this amazing, awesome college experience. And I wasn't.
That's how I felt.
And yeah, and I never would have known that. Like nobody would have ever known that I was struggling unless he like talked to me. But, you know, the social media facade really was facading. So I really struggled with like this cycle of like binging and restricting for most of college. And I didn't seek help until my junior year of college. So this is like 4 years of straight nonstop in my head about my body, about food, about control.
And it's not straight. An exaggeration.
Literally four like, years of my entire life. It's almost
all you everything can think about. I thought about. Like you're out with friends, you're out on a date, you're out doing this or that, and you are thinking about your body. I'm thinking about how, oh, like, do I have like a little love handle or something that's peeking out over my pants, blah, blah, blah. Like it really is constant.
For
and thinking years. About how like, oh my God, like I really, really wish I could eat that. Like I wish I could eat Pringles. And it didn't have to be an I wish. You know, I don't think I ate chips for like 2 years. Yeah. It's constant.
Like, that is so crazy to me. Like, the things that I could have thought about instead of that for 4 years blows my mind. Like, it just took up so much of my mental space for so long that I was finally like, okay. And at the time, I was actually studying to be a dietitian, which was another, like, little bit of a front. Again, like wellness and being healthy and like new recipes and cooking are things that I like to do. But the reason that I wanted to be a dietitian is because I thought I could like fix myself. I was like, oh, I want to figure out the best diet that's actually going to fix whatever's going on
right,
up there. But it's like, no diet's ever going to fix this because it's like all here. So it was then where I like kind of was able to look inward and be like, okay. Because it was kind of like push was coming to shove and people were starting to talk about like dietetic internships and stuff. And I was like, oh, wait, I actually don't want to do that. I was like, oh, okay, you guys are actually here for being a dietitian. Okay, damn, not me. So I was like, okay, I need to change course. And then I was like, okay, I think that I want to go to therapy and get help for this because I cannot keep living like this.
You were vegetarian at that point.
Oh, girl, I was lactose intolerant. I was vegetarian.
Oh, and also forgot, in high school, you were gluten-free.
Yeah, that was actually that was kind of a weird thing, though. So when I was a kid, I had, like, chronic sinus infections, and I was on antibiotics for, like, just on and off antibiotics for a couple years just because my sinus infections were getting so bad. And I eventually grew out of that, but I was, like, almost at the point where I was going to have, like, a surgery to open up my sinuses more. But then I think I hit puberty, honestly, and, like, got my period, and that kind of went away. And now I get a sinus infection, like, once or twice a year. But my gut microbiome was just, like, dead from all the antibiotics. So I didn't have the gut microbiome to digest gluten at the time.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
Because I never thought about that. Yeah, I saw at the time my brother was also struggling with something like kind of random and weird that happened. He got E. coli in Mexico.
Oh my God.
So he was like going to this gut doctor and they were like, okay, well, while you're here, might as well ask about her.
Yeah.
And that's when we kind of like determined that. So I was on a gluten-free diet for a while. And then I stopped having sinus infections and I like slowly started reintroducing gluten, but I think that was also kind of a good way for me to be like, no
like, cheeseburgers, can't have, please. Can't have bread, can't have pasta.
Yeah.
Those things that like are kind of demonized.
Right. So yeah, I was a lot of things. I was paleo. I tried the whole 30 one time, which.
Me too. I made it 9 days.
I didn't make it the whole 30 days. And I'm sure like there's probably great things, but I just not.
I wasn't doing it for the right reasons. Right. I was doing it because I saw one of my friends had lost a ton of weight. And I was like, in 30 days?
Yeah. Sign me up. Yeah.
All of this can be done. Because the thing was, I was like, yeah, but I'll act normal again once I get skinny.
Yes, that, okay, that's so true.
And
I can stop being crazy once I'm skinny.
And then once, girl, and you like were my freshman crazy year of college, like I was working out a lot and like being pretty active, walking around the campus all day and everything. So I did, like, I was feeling pretty good about my body. And so it was like, I'm seeing results. Like, I don't want to stop.
Like, reinforces it.
And between my freshman and sophomore year of college, I signed up for a half marathon and got like a trainer. And I was like, yeah, like I want a trainer because I really don't want to injure myself. If you can't see I'm rolling my eyes. Okay. I got a trainer because I wanted to be skinnier. I wanted to lose weight. I wanted to run this half marathon because I knew that running all the time, running all of that was going to make me slim down, or I thought it would. Not all runners are slim.
Well, and it also, like, you do need to increase your caloric intake. So,
but I wasn't planning on doing that.
Girl, but then, wasn't planning on that.
But then I was hating it. I was hating running.
It's okay to hate running, everybody.
I like going for a run for, like, 2 to 3 miles. But anything after that,
I thought you were going to say minutes.
No. 2 to 3 miles, like, on a beautiful day. I really do enjoy that. It lets my mind run wild, you know, whatever. I don't, like, crazy pace or anything like that. Like, I'm pretty slow pace, probably. 11
minutes.
Yeah. But, so I don't hate running where I would never want to do it. But I had to be like, okay, I'm obviously doing this for not the best reasons. And then I had a knee injury from when I was in dance and just, well, I don't know if it's an injury, but apparently my kneecaps sit too high up.
Oh.
So like it can cause knee pain.
Did you push them up?
I think it's called like Augsburg Schlotters or something.
Some German person must have come up.
Schlotters? I don't remember exactly. But anyway, so like that was kind of flaring up and like the pain under my knee. And I was just like, you know, because I was going to have to move back to school and then come back home for the weekend and then go back. But like that first week before school starts, it's called Welcome Weekend. It's super fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I don't want to miss out. And I'm doing all of this for what? And I was miserable. I hated it. The farthest I ever ran was 8 miles on a treadmill. And I am never doing it again.
On a treadmill?
And I am never doing it again. I think I was probably specifically upset that day about something, like just angry and just like.
8 miles is crazy on a treadmill.
I know. Well, that's what I think too. I still am like, am I lying? Like, I know it happened, but I don't really believe myself. But I just never want to use running as a punishment.
Yeah.
And that's what I was doing.
And that's probably why you hated it.
Yeah. And.
Other than the fact that it is running.
It just. Yeah, so that was another thing that I did. But how we...
Things
we
I
both,
did that.
Because we both suffered in silence, but I don't exactly remember. I think I remember how we admitted it to each other.
How?
What I remember is I think one time we were going to hang out with some of our other friends.
Maybe. I think I actually remember the day, and I think it was senior year.
Okay, maybe. But anyway, so I came over before, and I was going to talk to you. I think I just was like... getting to a point where I was like, I need to tell somebody, like, because I was also really depressed. And I think that's when I told you, and I think maybe because I knew that you were struggling too, just because just because of some of our conversations, I think, you know?
No, yeah, it was like, probably very obvious now that
like you were going to go make brownies, but you were going to have a black bean base and like avocado is the oil or something.
Girl, I was literally about to say, was I about to make black bean brownies? Because... saying brownies when I was like 18, 17, 16, yeah. They were black bean brownies.
Were they good? Oh, really?
I'm sure that you could make them good, but I was like replacing everything that made it would make it good. Like, yeah, you probably make black bean brownies, but then you actually add real sugar.
Yeah.
I was doing like avocado, black, like I was making like a fucking pancake, like black bean, like it might as well have been like an enchilada. Like a black bean and avocados. Like that is not brownies. Like,
that's too much.
I know.
Like it's okay. You're doing too much. Just use the vegetable oil. And I could see how black beans could be like, because there's protein. There's protein in them.
Yeah. There's fiber. I like black beans. I have nothing against them, but they're not brownies.
Yeah. But anyway, so I feel like I remember that's like, how it came to be. I came over to your house, and then one of our friends was like, why are you guys so late? And I was like, oh, well, I was asking her dad about a gym membership.
Well, we're always late for one.
Yeah, but at that point, it wasn't like known.
That's true.
We were young.
Wait, why were we late? It's because we were talking
for so long and just like crying. And then I was like, okay, well, obviously we need to like.
Yeah, we need to
pull
like,
it together because I don't think we ever talked to our high school friends about it besides each other. But that's also something that kind of made us closer, I think.
I 1000% agree with you. And I really do think that's why like we are as close as we are is because we have both had similar struggles. Like we're the only people with divorced parents. We are the only people with eating disorders. We're the ones that have been mentally fucked in the head for so long.
Both had like kind of a harder time with college.
Yeah. So I feel like our paths just have been very similar.
Mm.
So, and oh my gosh, thank God, because I know that there's at least one person in this world that has been able to understand like each of my hardships. But yeah. And mm-hmm. I think that definitely made us closer. And like our other friends know now.
Yeah.
But to the extent and the depth, well, they will now, but yeah.
And
nothing against them. It's just that
no, I didn't share it.
I didn't think that they would be able to relate.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to admit that to people that like
I didn't want people to worry about me either.
Yeah, well, and even to this day, I still have a couple of friends that are like, I've never ever thought about what I've eaten or worried about what I look like. They just.
That's insane.
They just have a body that just like.
I'm so happy for them.
I'm jealous.
I was going to say, but I'm jealous.
Also, I'm just like, no wonder you're so like joyful and down for anything and all of that. You know what I mean? Like,
you have so much more mental space.
Well, they've literally never worried about eating a piece of pizza or feeling guilt about what they ate, and it's never shown on them either. Like they actually haven't put on weight, whereas
there's something to that.
What about it?
Where it's just like the stress of this diet is not even gonna work, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like stressing out about food is so bad for your health and like your heart, and like stress is seriously more of a killer than holding on to 5 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And like seriously, 4 years of that, I can't. But then that 4 years is when I finally got help. But you know, that doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
So it's like two more years later.
Like trajectory for getting help.
So I was already in therapy for my anxiety.
For other things. The other trials.
And just like therapy really just helped me learn some coping strategies and to just like slow my mind down a little bit. And then I like kind of brought it up to her. I was like, hey, I also have been struggling with like these feelings. And she connected me to an eating disorder dietitian. And I was like, whoa, like I don't think I need help like with meal plans or anything. And she said, no, like her and I actually work together as a team. I just happened to like go to this therapy place that also mm-hmm. partnered with eating disorder treatment. So I was never like an inpatient treatment or anything, and I never like met the qualifications for a specific eating disorder. It's called like eating disorders not otherwise specified.
Okay.
So that's just basically like you're having a lot of disordered thoughts that are heavily impacting your mental health, your life, your well-being. So I was in talk therapy for a long time. I was going to therapy twice a week.
That's a lot. It's exhausting.
It's a lot. And it's really tiring because you have to like, you know, talk about stuff and say things that you've never said before. And the way that, like, she, that they both approached it for me was just, like, I was very interested in, like, finding truth about this and, like, figuring out why this was happening. So they helped me, like, really peel back some of the layers and, like, what all goes into developing an eating disorder and, like, almost helping me understand the eating disorder perspective of it, which helped me, like, apply that and look inward and be like, no, this isn't your fault. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like you have a lack of willpower. It's just that there's, like, all these things that just kind of compounded and ended up in your brain. So here's the things that you need to do to, like, rewire it. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna be stuck like this forever. Like, and like that, being stuck like that forever was not a good place. In the place I'm at now, like, I'm in such a better place where I'm like, yeah, no, I'm gonna have my struggles for the rest of my life, but it's not, like, all consuming.
Mm-hmm.
And they just really helped me to, like, rewire my brain. And we talked a lot about, like, the socio-political implications of, like, fat phobia and, like, how we historically got here,
mm-hmm.
which, like, I thought was so interesting and cool. And they really, like, educated me kind of about, like, how we got to this volatile place that we're in. And they just gave me, like, a lot of statistics and, like, talked about other people that were also in treatment, that were also my age, that were also going to the same school as me. They're like, it's not just you. And they did offer me, like, group therapy, which I never went to, but I think that actually would have really been helpful because, like I said, I didn't know that other people thought like this and, like, had similar issues. So mm-hmm. I think, like, putting faces to it, but I was like, oh my God, what if I see somebody I know? Like, that's going to be really embarrassing.
Mm.
Which in the end it would not have been, and I probably because would have became why a else really would good
they be there,
right?
You know, but that's the right. Same.
It's a dumb excuse, and I kind of wish that I would have gone at the time because I probably would have made some friends who are also. But I was also afraid to make friends that had eating disorders because I didn't want to, like,
mm-hmm.
spend so much space there mentally. But I did that for about a year. And then after I graduated college, I feel like things got so much better because everybody's just, like, kind of doing their own thing. And I stopped comparing myself to what other people were doing and, like, what you should be doing when you're 22. And everybody just kind of, like, I don't know, lets loose and is doing a bunch of different stuff. So then I felt, like, more confident in myself to do the things that I truly wanted to do instead of doing, like, what everybody else was doing. And I think that really helped me. And now, you know, like I said before, nobody's perfect. Everybody has those days.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I'm at a place now where I can be, like, more objective in, like, okay, to feel my best, to be genuinely healthy, and, like, I want to, like, now I work out because I want to be able to have, like, bone density so I don't lose it when I am going through menopause in, like, 30 years. You know what I mean? Like, I think about those kinds of things. So, like, having balance and, like, increasing my muscle mass just so I can have, like, longevity in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, when I do have kids, like, being able to, like, go up and down and, like, on and off the floor sort of thing. Like, those are the things that I prioritize now, which I feel like is a lot of just, like, your frontal lobe developing mm-hmm. and just getting older, like, your priorities just shift. And I feel like a combination of, like, therapy and my priorities shifting has, like, led me to this place where I'm trying, where I want to be, like, my healthiest for myself and for everybody else around me sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a huge mindset shift.
Yeah. And it took a lot of rewiring. And, you know, old habits die screaming. So, yeah.
Like we always say, old habits die screaming.
Yeah. Literally.
It's so hard. It's hard. And
honestly, one thing that I do, if anybody listens to this episode, like, I really hope that it just, like, provides comfort in knowing and listening to somebody else, like, share their story.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I want to know, like, you don't have to out yourself, but, like, I think it's a greater conversation that can be had. And I would mm-hmm. love if more people like would want to join that conversation.
Me too.
And like hear other people's stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think part of the reason that both of us had such a hard time really admitting that there was an eating disorder going on or feeling like it was legit or anything like that was that it wasn't specified. It wasn't categorized under one specific one. And there's, you know, the main ones that you hear about, right? Like anorexia, bulimia, there's orthorexia.
Mm-hmm.
What's that one?
That's like when there's this obsession with like clean eating or like healthy eating. So like mm-hmm. really not so much like calorie intake, but more so just like clean eating.
Yeah.
And I think that gets a little bit murky, especially with this like new revolution of people that are like trying to be all clean and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's yeah. getting kind of murky. But yeah, I didn't even know there was such thing as like an eating disorder not otherwise specified.
Me neither. And so I thought, you know, that going back to what I was saying, like, oh, you're failing at having an eating disorder even. Like, because I didn't fit into one of the main specifications. I'm sure there's more than three, but yeah,
I don't know. The DSM-5 is like pretty stingy.
I know.
Like pretty specific.
I know, but I just feel like I'm forgetting something, but it becomes a hard thing too. Then when you do want to be taking care of your body and it's like, okay, well, if I'm going to the gym, then I want to make sure that I'm having enough protein intake and all this stuff. And then, you know, you see people on social media that are like, yeah, I count my macros or this or that. And like, I'm just...
What's the line?
I'm never going to count my macros. I don't think that's healthy for me.
That's another thing I did.
I think for somebody that hasn't struggled with an eating disorder, it might not be as dangerous. But I think placing such emphasis on a number is...
Slippery.
I just think that that could really easily turn into something that's not healthy. Like, oh, I didn't meet my... this goal for the day, or this would be, I don't know the units, three too many macro. I don't know the units.
It's grams. So. It goes like your macros, it's like short for macronutrients. So like how many grams of carbs, fat, and protein are you getting in a day? Sometimes they include
and it's
fiber.
Like I have enough to think about. That and the fact that you need to like clean the baseboards in your house, those are two things that really send me over the edge and just think, is life really worth all this?
And the fact that you have to clean like your dishwasher and your washing machine too.
Oh, we don't do that.
Like, please, the thing that cleans things needs cleaning now? What?
But like, it's things just, like that. Like, I just, for me, I know this is used for babies, but for me, sometimes I have to tell myself, fed is best. Like, it's okay.
I know, this is for babies.
I know, but sometimes
it's for kids too.
I'm like, just because I can't eat like the healthiest thing right now, I'm really hungry and I shouldn't skip another meal. So fed is best. Like, eat what you have.
No, that's actually that's so bars. That's so that's good.
No, it's not like
it's not revolutionary, but I don't think people think about it in that context, but you should.
Well, because that was a big thing too that like was so wired in my brain is I was like, if I can't find something healthy, I just won't eat. Like I went out to a diner with like there was one vacation I went to with and it was me, my dad, and my brother. And we went to a diner and I remember I was so hungry, but all I ate was some saltines because we were at a diner. I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find a salad.
You could have found like an egg white omelet maybe. But you don't need to. Like, just eat whatever you want at the diner.
My brother
like,
got that, a big-ass Belgian waffle with ice cream on top.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I was so jealous.
Hash browns, though, from a diner.
And I was so starving, good. Sitting there saying I'm not hungry. And
I wonder
and so,
if you're – have you ever asked – you can cut this out. Have you ever asked your dad, like, have you ever told him?
Yeah, he knows.
Okay.
But
– did he know at the time?
No. But I did all my own grocery shopping as a teen.
Okay, that's another thing that I think is actually very interesting because I did the same thing.
But also just because like I lived with my dad and he, God bless him, love him to death. He eats a lot of like, or at least at the time, he was eating a lot of like Pop-Tarts and Chicken Kiev and frozen pizzas. And that was not going to fit into the regimen.
Yeah, and you also want, like, some variety, too. Like,
yeah, and so I would go do my own grocery shopping, and it would be, like, I think, you know, that taught me a lot of independence, but at the same time, like...
You were doing it for the wrong reasons.
Well, it was either do that or don't eat.
Yeah.
Like, I had to make all my own meals. Nobody else was going to make them for me.
Just me?
Okay. I was eating zoodles. When... And I was eating carrot noodles.
When...
Okay. Girl, just eat some pasta, man.
Oh my gosh. The other thing, I cannot believe I forgot this. This is kind of funny. You guys can laugh now. I used to work at a bakery. A bakery. Like Harry Styles. And I, like, in the throes of my disordered eating, I was working at a bakery, and I would just, like, smell the things instead of eating them. I'd be like, oh, this donut smells so good. And then I would, like, eat a carrot. Please.
That's like, crazy. Poster child for
me. That's crazy. And I think just...
I do remember one time you said, sometimes I treat myself to a date dipped in peanut butter.
Okay, those actually still really slap.
I know, but it's...
But it's not a dessert.
No.
Like, now I'll have a date dipped in some sort of nut butter with chocolate chips stuffed in it.
Yum.
And I can also have a brownie if I want it, but not a black bean brownie.
Not a black bean, not an enchilada not brownie.
Not an enchilada brownie. But I think, like, the reason I was doing this is, one... Because I had this, like, desire to be thin. And I was feeling, like, proud of myself when I could show such control.
Yeah, I would feel really proud of myself when I could successfully skip a meal. Or when I could successfully purge.
Yep.
Or when I could push myself too hard at the gym where I felt like I was going to throw up or I felt like I was, like, dizzy or something like that.
You know, for better or for worse, like, I do have, like, a fear of throw up. So that actually might have worked in my favor a little bit.
Aww. I don't have that
fear. Which is funny. But actually, there is – I did learn in therapy that there is this, like, correlation between people that have this fear of throw up. They're usually anxious. Also end up having an eating disorder later in life.
Because they're so scared about something making them throw up?
I have no idea. Hmm. I don't really know why, but I remember it's not a causation, but there's, like, some sort of correlation between.
I've gotten food poisoning too many times to be scared of throwing up or shitting my pants. I'm still scared of shitting my pants, but it happens.
Yeah, I, for better or for worse, at least that wasn't a problem I had. We can laugh about that.
Well,
that
was... I said what I needed to say.
Yeah.
I feel good about what we did, what we said. And if you're listening to this and you can relate, I'm really, really sorry.
Yeah.
That
no, you got some sisters in Christ here.
Yeah. Well, not in Christ.
Not in Christ. Sisters in eating disorders.
No, let's not. That can't be our brand.
No. Sisters in...
Look, we're...
We're here for you.
We have been through it and talking about it, like, this isn't easy. It's easy to talk to you about it, but when I think about actually, like, posting it online and stuff, that's really vulnerable. But the reality is that people aren't going to care that much, you know? Yeah. Like, but I hope that it, at the same time that I really hope that this reaches some people that it needs to, I'm really sad for the people that need to hear it because they're struggling with it or they have. And I just want to let you know that you're not alone. You don't have to be. And there's a lot of people that are suffering in silence. And yeah, I'm just sad for you. And I'm sad for me. And I'm sad for you, Clara, that this is our reality, or it has been, but it doesn't have to be forever. And I am happy that we could come from this from more of a healed place and a much better place, but also admit that it's not like you just
fell out of a coconut tree.
Yeah, it's not like it never happened. Yeah. And if you've never struggled with body dysmorphia or an eating disorder, first of all, do you exist?
Where are you? What did you do to protect yourself?
But also, I really, really hope that you did listen to this episode all the way through, because it still matters that other people hear this, because the way that we speak about ourselves, the way we speak about other people, the way we speak about people when they're not around, it matters. It doesn't matter whether you're being like, oh my gosh, did you lose weight? You look great. Like that, or whether you're saying like, oh my gosh, like they totally gained weight, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter if they're in the room or not. Like, I just don't think we should be making comments on people's bodies. And I hope that maybe
even your own
people hearing this that haven't struggled before can hear it and be a bit more mindful and look around and be like, damn, there's people that are really struggling that I never thought. Cause I mean, I've talked about it in previous, I think episodes or blog posts or something. Like I have talked about having struggled with an eating disorder before, but never to such a depth. Yeah, that's all I got.
Well, bestie, this was good.
Well, it was good for what it is.
Yeah.
It's important to have conversations like this. Thank you for like being brave and talking about it and coming on here to talk about it, because I just know that it's going to help somebody.
Yeah. And I really don't think that if we wouldn't have told each other, I think things would have been different. So
yeah,
maybe this will give you courage to tell somebody.
Yeah.